Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome all of you to our very first episode of 2012. We just getting back in the swing of things after the holidays. I hope all of you had a fantastic holiday, whatever you happen to have celebrated, and that you had a happy and safe New Year's Eve. In today's show, we're going to be talking about quite a few things. The focus of the show is going to be, I'm going to use the phrase, bibliomania. I'm going to be talking about a lot of different books and literature and the written word as it relates for gamers and wargamers. I also have some announcements to make about my own life. I'm going to be reviewing the new digital subscription format for Battle Games Magazine. I want to talk about my Christmas. We're going to be talking again, of course, about the Total Con contest. I'm going to be talking about a very sad event that happened at the end of last year in my family. And then I want to also talk about the SOPA and PIPA, P-I-P-A, acts, which are before the United States Congress for voting. And I'm just going to get things going. Let's start off with, well, with
for
me.
For those of you
in the
who
past
are long-time
listeners,
my
you will know that at
gaming,
the
my
end of
game
this past
thing.
Year, and
the,
you know, that would just be
well,
me talking
December
about
5th,
whatever
was,
had happened in the past
was,
week since my grandson went live, and of course, since now
he
we're on a bi-weekly format.
Battling
would end up being like my bi-weekly week in gaming, which is kind of a little weird. So I'm supposed to hard
attacks. So I've done away with that segment
and getting older.
Just kind of
he also
about
things
from
as
dementia.
Up and about. He passed away for us. It was suddenly, and it's been very tough dealing with that. We've, you know, managed to move on, which is all you can do. But I want to thank all of you because so many of you had either written me emails or left me notes or somehow got in touch with me to give me your sympathies. And I really appreciated that. I often just, you know, I sit here, I record the show and, you know, I do some blogging and everything. And I put the stuff out there and I kind of talk to all of you. And all of you are so nice. You invite me into your home whenever you download this episode or whenever you read something I have written on the blog. And, you know, I'm just this guy talking about stuff. But it meant a lot to me to know that, you know, maybe you had gone through something similar, lost a loved one or a friend or someone, and that you felt, you know, strongly enough to just want to put out a message out there to me just to say that, you know, you're sorry and that you understand. So many of you had done that, and it's hard for me to, you know, say, oh, you and you and you and you and, you know, I thank you also, because I don't want to leave anyone out. I just want to thank all of you. But I do want to say that I was very touched by Henry Hyde, who had posted on the Battle Games Facebook page about the passing of my grandfather and extending his sympathies to me. And seeing that, you know, it was right before Battle Games had switched over to the new ownership under Atlantic Publishers. But it really touched me to see that. And I know so many of you had me in your thoughts. And that I'm just very thankful for all of that. I'm thankful that you guys, you know, took the time to send a message out to me. My grandfather, as you can imagine, has meant a lot to me. He's taught me quite a bit. And because of him, I kind of have some of this love that I have for history, for militaria, for gaming. And when I was a young child, him and my father both taught me to play chess. And, you know, always just had time for different types of games and everything. So having that chance as a child to play games with him and to, you know, witness him and observe him working in his workshop and repairing things and building things and fixing things kind of has given me some spark to, you know, do something similar. I'm in no way good with my hands. I'm not a handy person. I'm not good at creating that kind of stuff or whatever. But whatever little talent I have for painting, for, you know, assembling and making terrain or any of that kind of stuff, I like to think that at least some of that is a result of my grandfather. And, you know, although he's gone, his legacy lives on not only with, you know, his family and everyone, but in all the things that he had done and all the stuff that he had taught not only everyone else, but that he had taught me. So I just wanted to, you know, say a little thank you for that. And moving on from some sad news onto some good news, I want to announce that I am now writing a weekly column over at Troll in the Corner. and Troll in the Corner, which you can find at trollitc.com. That's trollitc.com, is a gaming blog. It kind of focuses on role-playing games, more or less, but it's a gaming blog, which is run by this fantastic guy named Ben Gerber, B-E-N-G-E-R-B-E-R, who lives in Massachusetts, and he was a guest last year at TotalCon. He sat on one of the panels that I had attended. It was a game designers panel, and he sat on there, and he's actually a really great guy. Ben had recently put out a little bit of a call on his blog saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for people who might want to be writing for me. You know, we can't offer compensation, but if you're willing to give up some time and do a little writing or whatever, that I would love to have you. And I thought about it, and I was like, well, you know, I got my own blog, I got the podcast to do, and then all the other stuff that I do. Do I really have the time to do it? Can I commit to it? But I sent him an email and said, you know, I want to help you out. So what do I got to do? And, you know, of course, I linked to my blog, CWF Gamecast, and he wanted to see, of course, a writing sample. And, I mean, it's like years and years and years and years worth of writing. So we had that, and he said, come on board. So right now I have my inaugural post out, my inaugural column entry, which went up live today. It's titled, Here's Jonathan. I just kind of introduced myself to the Troll ITC people over there. I hope that you'll take the chance to head on over to trollitc.com, check out my post, read what everyone else has done, maybe leave a comment here or there. Like I said, a lot of the stuff on Troll ITC is kind of focused on role-playing games, board games too, of course. But I hope to inject some miniatures gaming, some historical gaming and wargaming kind of stuff into it, along with some, you know, electronic gaming things like, well, World of Warcraft, for example, some of my endeavors on there. Now, you don't have to worry. I, of course, am still going to blog at wargamingforums.com. This podcast still keeps on continuing. Every other week, you'll find it at wargamingforums.com and, of course, on iTunes and so forth. This is just another endeavor I'm doing over at Troll ITC. Just a chance to kind of, you know, write about other stuff with a strict schedule. If you're interested in reading what I have to say over at Troll ITC, and I promise you, I'm going to try to not duplicate things on there that are on wargamingforums.com and vice versa. But if you're interested in seeing what I have to do, I will have a new post up there every single Thursday, and that's just, you know, my set kind of schedule, so to speak, my deadline for new content to go up on Thursdays. But if there's something interesting, then I will be sure to have extra stuff up on there in the meantime. So like I said, I have my first post on there where I just kind of talk about myself, and then there's another post going to be coming up next week where I'm going to be talking about Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition and the announcement that Wizards of the Coast has made for 5th edition, but also, and this leads into the next thing I want to talk about, I had spoken to Ben, the owner, and asked him if it would be okay to do a little promotion for the TotalCon contest that I'm running here on the podcast. And he said, of course, he loves TotalCon. He's friends with the TotalCon people, and he thinks that maybe some of his readers over there would love to participate in the contest and win some free TotalCon contest registrations. So I want to remind all of you of our TotalCon contest. And you're thinking, TotalCon contest? What the heck are you talking about with this TotalCon contest? So I've been talking about the TotalCon contest. How long can I keep on saying TotalCon contest? That I've been talking about this for quite a while. And I want you to enter because you can win free, F-R-E-E, free passes to TotalCon, which happens this February down in southeastern Massachusetts. Now, what do you have to do for this contest? Do you have to jump through hoops? Do you have to give away your firstborn? Do you have to paint me an army? No! All you have to do is send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. And in that email, please name what your favorite American Civil War game is. Whatever the game is that you like, name it. There's quite a few out there. It can be a video game, it can be a board game, it can be a card game, it can be a rule set that you would use for miniatures games such as Black Powder. It can be a game that's in print, out of print, whatever. A game that you like, that's your favorite, that's set in, about, or deals with the American Civil War, and I need you to tell me why. Why is that game your favorite? You don't have to write an opus if you want to. Go ahead. It can just be a couple sentences saying, game XYZ is my favorite because I like the colors that they use in the rulebook. Okay, if that's why you like the game, tell that to me, and there you go. You're all set. Now, I'm going to pick the one person with what I judge to be is the best reason to win one free weekend registration pass to TotalCon 2012. On top of that, three others can win. So if you enter and you don't win with the best reason, you could still win a day pass for TotalCon 2012. And now how is that going to happen? Well, I'm going to choose three people at random. So I'll just take all the submissions and I'll pick, you know, three, and you will get one of the passes for the day to go down to TotalCon. Now, like I said, email me with your submission, or if you don't want to take the time to email, either send your submission via Twitter by sending me a tweet at CWF Gamecast, post your submission on the Facebook page, or post a comment on the blog, wargamingforums.com, with your submission. The best place to post a comment on the blog would be in response to the TotalCon post, and the name of the post is Win Free TotalCon 2012 Passes. You can use the passes to pre-register. There's a code on it that'll let you do it. You can bring the pass with you to TotalCon and redeem it if you want to register at the door. Or if you pre-registered and you bring it with you, you can go and then get taken care of and they'll reimburse you that way. So far, we have one submission, I believe, and I hope more of you will submit. The deadline, and this is the extra important bit, the deadline is midnight Eastern Standard Time on February 1st. So you guys got a little bit of time to go, but please hurry and get your submissions in. I have to give a huge thank you to the folks at TotalCon for donating these passes. Many thanks to Angela and to Steven for donating the passes, sponsoring this contest, and just for running a fantastic convention. So I look forward to reading all of your submissions. Remember, email cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com with the name of your favorite American Civil War game and say why it is your favorite. You have until February 1st, 2012 at midnight Eastern Standard Time. So I look forward to reading all that you have to say about TotalCon. So at the beginning of this episode, I talked about that this is going to be kind of a book-oriented episode, and that is true. So easing us into that, I want to do a review of Battle Games Magazine. Now, this isn't like a review really of the whole magazine like I have in the past. I reviewed individual issues and said, oh, you know, issue 14 is really cool because it has this and this and this, and it's awesome because of that. What I want to talk about right now is my experience being a digital subscriber after the fact that ownership has changed hands to Atlantic Publishers. So I know some of you are subscribers, and I know some of you are digital subscribers, and you will have had a similar, but hopefully different, experience than I had. Now, back right before Christmas, Henry Hyde had put out a little announcement saying that, you know, he was told that Atlantic was mailing out the new issue to subscribers and that everyone would get it by Christmas. And I had asked him, well, what about the digital copies? Because, you know, they're digital subscribers, and how is that going to work? And being a digital subscriber, of course, I wanted to know for myself, but also I wanted to know for this podcast to share the word with all of you, because some of you are digital subscribers. And he had found out that emails were going to be sent out to individuals to let them know that they could go ahead and access the new issue of the magazine. And, you know, I waited and I waited and I waited and didn't get an email. And I said, okay, this is weird. I had, you know, spoken with them and find out where the email would be coming from, because I wanted to make sure it would get whitelisted and go through. So I did all of that on my end. And I waited and waited and waited and waited some more. and still didn't have anything. So then I sent Henry an email. I said, Henry, you know, who do I contact over there to find out what's going on? Because, I mean, I don't know what happened to it, but I'd like to find out. And he said he was going to look into it. And while he was doing that, I went ahead and went on the Atlantic Publishers website and the Exact Editions website. Exact Editions are the people who are in charge of the digital side of the publication. And I said, you know, I didn't get the email. What's going on? Could someone help me? I'm kind of confused and want to know what happened with it. And I'd like to get access to my copy of the magazine. I'm a paying subscriber and I love battle games and I want to be able to read it. I'm really excited about the fact that it's continued on and, you know, Atlantic's doing everything that they're going to be doing and stuff, and that battle games is not dead. So I never heard back, and Christmas came and went, and I heard from Henry, and eventually I got an email from a very nice person over at Exact Editions who assured me they had sent an email originally saying, go ahead and get your copy. But this person resent the email, and curiously enough, this time I got the email. And I spoke with them and said, I don't know what's going on. That I never got the original email, and I checked, you know, I checked my spam folder. I checked, like, everything. I checked all my different email accounts and double-checked to make sure that everything was how it was supposed to. And it never got to me originally, which kind of perturbed me because I was thinking, well, you know, things are being sent digitally and I'm not getting them. What the heck's going on? So after talking with the person at Exact Editions, I was able to, you know, go ahead and log in to the Exact Editions website and go ahead and access the new issue of the magazine. And afterwards, I did receive another email from this person with the headers of the email, basically to prove that they did send it. But for whatever reason, it never arrived in my inbox. I had it, you know, whitelisted. I checked the junk mail and everything, and it never showed up. So that email must have been cursed. And, you know, I believe that they sent it, and they have the proof that they had sent it. But it still, it never got to me, which is kind of weird. But that aside, I'm still kind of bothered by the fact that I never received a response as a direct result to the communications I submitted to Exact Editions about the issue in the beginning, because I used the form that they have, the contact form, and not a peep. And maybe they figured that since they did get back to me as a result of Henry Hyde, so thankfully going and talking to them about this, maybe they figured that that solved the issue. But I mean, I never got anything the other way. And if I never said to Henry, hey, do you know what's going on? Could you maybe help me out? And I'm just confused. If I never asked about it, I like to think that maybe I never would have heard from them. And that bugs me, because that's not good customer service. So that was the first kind of weird thing that happened with the digital format of Battle Games Magazine. None of it's Henry's fault at all. None of it is. Like I said, I eventually got access to it, and it turns out that it was just some sort of weird tech thing where they sent the email and it never showed up in my email at all. I never received it. So for whatever the reason was, it never happened, and I look forward to seeing what happens with the next issue. But let's talk about how they actually handle the digital format for their magazines. And I have to say that how they handle it is something I was concerned about from the moment I found out that Battle Games was going to be going to Atlantic Publishers. So if you happen to head over to the Atlantic Publishers website, you're going to be able to see that they will have other magazines, of course. And you can find them at atlanticpublishers.com. And they have 6 magazines. One of them is Miniature War Games, and one is, of course, Battle Games Magazine. And if you go ahead and you're in there and you click on Battle Games, you're going to see that you can subscribe and all sorts of stuff and get a free digital issue. But one thing you find out is that Exact Editions are the people who handled the digital side of the magazines. And you're thinking, okay, so how do I get them? So you need to go to exacteditions.com. Or if you have like a smartphone or an iPad or something like that, they have an app that you can download. It's a free app that you download on your device. And then you just log in with your username and password. And then you can then get access to what you have. So I was kind of disturbed because I noticed that when the new issue of Battle Games, in my case, came, that I can only access it through Exact Editions. And what I mean by this is that I can only access the magazine either as a result of going to exacteditions.com and reading it on their website, or by using the Exact Editions app on my iPad, for example, that, like, I can't just read it on the computer unless I'm on the web. What if I lose access to the internet? I'm not going to be able to get to the magazine. Another concern I have is the fact that since it's restricted this way, my subscription really isn't giving me ownership of the magazine. I am getting a license to access the magazine. And there's an important difference here. In the past, with Battle Games and with other publications out there, if you subscribe to the magazine or the publication and you subscribe for it digitally, you get it and you own it. You get a file, and the file is a full issue. It has it. It's, you know, it's protected. It's copyrighted and everything. It's, you know, it's their work. It's their intellectual property, and they have every right to have it protected. I mean, they put the work. They have the ownership of it, trademarks and so forth. And I'm not saying they shouldn't. They have all that. But other publications give you the file so that you can, say, read it on whatever computer you want to read it on. That you can transfer it to your device and access it that way. That you're not tied to having access to the internet, reading it on a website, or reading it only in a special app that they have. And honestly, I think that's kind of crummy. I tried it out and I thought, well, maybe it's just something for me to get used to. So I, you know, tried the website and I looked at stuff. And I got to say, I mean, it's cool. Because, like, if you're on exacteditions.com and you log in and you're looking at it, and you open up the magazine, you can, you know, view different pages. And they set it up so that, like, information is kind of like a live link. If you hover over an ISBN, you can click on it. And then it'll take you to, like, an Amazon website. And this happenstance, it's an Amazon UK website. So that you can maybe buy the item if you happen to want to. Why they partnered with Amazon, don't really know. But, you know, you can do that. Or if there's a URL, you can click on the URL. It'll take you to the website. There's a phone number. It'll take you to that. If there's a page number for table of contents, you click on the page number or the article. It'll take you to that. So, I mean, that's awesome. The fact that it's live, you can just click and navigate around the magazine or navigate to other web pages or whatever from it. That's awesome. And I think it's just fantastic. I have no problem whatsoever with that. I think, you know, this is a really good thing. It's a step up and something that they've done to just kind of make it be extra cool for people. It's extra accessible in that regard. You can just kind of go and you can point, you can click. I mean, it works for just about anything on there. And with their online website thing, you can tell if it's something that you can click on because it's kind of surrounded in green. So you think, oh, he has a green box. That means if I click on it, I can go and I can call Henry Hyde. I can go to Osprey Publishing, or I can go to page 42 in the magazine, or whatever the case happens to be. And I mean, they have controls on the website, so you can zoom in, you can zoom out, go to the next page, all that kind of stuff. And I mean, there is a link to a printable PDF so that you could print it out page by page. So, I mean, that is a possibility that, say, you're like, oh, well, I don't want to read it on their website. I want to print out each page at a time. That they give you that option. But still, you have to go to the Exact Editions website or their app for your smart device, and then have to go and click on page by page for it. And then when you stop subscribing, what happens then? I'm presuming that means you no longer have access to the issues that you had paid for because you're no longer a subscriber. So they're not going to let you log in because all of the content's there. So you may not subscribe after March, and then say you want to go in June to get your March issue. Well, they're not going to let you because they got all the issues after March. At least this is what I'm thinking. I don't know for certain because my subscription is still active. I haven't asked Henry or the people at Exact Editions or Atlantic Publishers about that. So, I mean, I don't know what happens after your subscription stops. But If it's like anything else where you are licensed and you don't own the content or a copy of the content, then I think you're going to be denied access. And one of the ways that I've kind of come to this conclusion is my job. I work in a library, but I spend a lot of time reading about and getting up to date, or as up to date as anyone can get, on ebooks, digital publishing, and that kind of stuff. My library is part of a consortia that has a gigantic collection of ebooks, and my job involves getting material for people, sending material out to other places. We do things globally. I do a lot of international kind of lending and borrowing of stuff, and just like all sorts of stuff. So I'm aware of all this because we try to do digital as much as possible, but far too often we run into the problem where library ABC has something or says they have something, but it turns out they just have a license to it, and their license doesn't allow them to give a copy to someone else. Well, okay, that's fine, but they're paying the license. They're not actually owning a copy of it. If they stop paying the license to whoever has it, then they don't have access to any of that material anymore. And that's also true with how my library deals with ebooks. It belongs to a company, pays a company for access to a bunch of different ebooks, and then on top of that, it, quote, buys, but really is spending money to license more ebooks. And if the company goes under, or if my library stops paying the licensing fee, it doesn't have access to any of that stuff. And it has spent thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to, quote, buy new ebooks. You know, New York Times bestsellers or all sorts of stuff. And you would think that would mean, like, if they're spending the money to buy it, that they are owning it, but they are not. They are just licensing access. They're saying, we're going to give you X amount of dollars so that we can then have access to this particular title, and that we can then have access to these other titles. And that is what Exact Editions, Atlantic Publishers is doing, Battlekins Magazine, and the other publications that Atlantic Publishers has. Now, this was not made clear to me, or if it was, I did not understand that it was clear when Battle Games switched ownership. And like I said, I don't blame Henry for any of this. This is just it's how Atlantic Publishers kind of does. But I think Atlantic needed to have better lines of communication to the existing subscribers and to any new subscribers to say, you know what? If you're going to get a digital subscription, that means you are just paying to have access to the material for the duration of your subscription. And then when your subscription goes, well, too bad, you don't have it. So, of course, those who pay to have a subscription to the physical format, I mean, the company can't say, oh, you know, your subscription's up, we need you to mail back the copies of the magazine that we sent you. They can't do that. They're not going to do that. You own those. So there's another issue in stake here in that those who are paying for physical subscriptions, I mean, you are paying more because it has to be mailed to you and it's a physical thing. They're getting to own and keep the item, but those who are digitally subscribing do not. And of course, a digital subscription costs less, but I mean, the company doesn't have to print out a copy to mail to you. They don't have to pay for mailing or any of that kind of stuff. So they do save, but those who digitally subscribe are, in my eyes, kind of like second-class citizens. And I think there's a fairness issue here. I do have to say that if my feelings remain the way that they are, that when my subscription to Battle Games expires, I will not be renewing. If I could afford to, I would purchase a physical subscription to the magazine. But as we all know, money's tight everywhere for all sorts of people, and it's hard to find the money to pay for a physical subscription to a magazine. And unfortunately, I don't have the funds to do that. I would love to be able to say, do you know what? I want to convert my subscription over to a physical subscription so that I can get the physical magazine. I've seen the physical magazine in person or old issues of it. I mean, it's fantastic. It's a huge thing, and you get the big pages to open with fantastic glossy photographs and everything. I mean, it's wonderful to just be able to hold it in your hand. And a digital format is wonderful for a variety of other reasons that I've talked about before. But now that Atlantic Publishers has taken over and they put the magazine out digitally through Exact Editions, it's not the same thing. And I feel like it's subpar. I don't think I'm getting a good value for my money how they're transmitting the issue digitally. So I'm disappointed, to say the least, with it. And, you know, the content in Battle Games, it's as good as it ever was. It's fantastic. The writing's great. Henry's editing and design's fantastic. It's amazing. It's great. It's just the publishers and how they're sending it out. And I was kind of concerned about it in the beginning because I saw this is what they do with one of the other publications. And I was hoping that, you know, well, maybe they won't do this with Battle Games. Just maybe that's not going to happen. And I don't know if maybe I deluded myself into it and I should have just realized, well, of course it's going to be the same as the others because this is how the others go and it's owned by the same company. But I honestly thought, well, maybe they won't. And perhaps that was dumb of me to do. But regardless of that, I am disappointed and I'm going to hate not having my subscription to Battle Games. But as long as Atlantic Publishers and Exact Editions continue to make their publications available in this way that they do, I can't support that. So I will unfortunately be not renewing my subscription if things stay the same, and I think that they very well might. Also, let's start talking about some good stuff. Let's talk about Christmas and New Year's. So Christmas was a good occasion for me, and I hope it was good for you. Got some wonderful presents, and most importantly, it was just spending time with family and friends. We had my parents and my wife's mother over for Christmas Day dinner, and Christmas Eve, my family gets together and does, you know, the typical, like, Italian Christmas Eve dinner, the fishes and everything and stuff, and we get together. And now that, you know, my wife and I have been married for over a year, we kind of bounce back and forth holidays with each other's family. So, like, you know, one year we'll do, you know, say Thanksgiving with her family, and the next year we do with mine and so forth. So we go back and forth. And this year was Christmas Eve with my family. So it was really nice to, you know, see everyone, especially whereas the passing of my grandfather was just weeks beforehand. So, I mean, it did make it a tough Christmas for that regard. But it was good to see everyone and for all of us to kind of get together. As far as gaming goes, I kind of got some really cool gaming-related gifts. Now, the first one wasn't for Christmas per se, but it was just kind of, I don't know, he's just being really nice. So I got this fantastic book, and you may have heard me flipping it open. It's called, it's called Conwy Castle, and it's about a castle in Wales. It's put out by the, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that because that's in Welsh, and I will definitely butcher it, but it's put out by one of the local councils over there, which I presume to be kind of like the township over there for promoting, you know, the castle and stuff. And this has fantastic information and tons of illustrations and photographs about the castle and just like the history of it and the fact that there's all these castles built over there in Wales to, you know, get the Welsh to submit to England. And you're thinking, well, where did this fantastic gift come from? And it came from one of you guys, one of you listeners. And this listener has won some contests in the past, and he writes me from time to time, which is really cool. And because I love hearing from all of you. And this was, I mean, this just kind of floored me. He sent me a gift, Andrew Malcolm. I just want to say thank you. I've thanked him before. I sent, you know, an email, and I was all giddy when it came in. And my wife was like, "You got a package, and it's from overseas. And what the heck did you buy now?" I was like, "I didn't buy anything." And I opened it up, and I was, you know, I was expecting a bunch of just a pile of photographs he had taken, which would have been awesome in and of itself. And then I saw this book, and I was flipping through, and it was just really cool, especially since I am really kind of getting geared up about the Saga rules, which are going to, well, they're out now, but some of my friends are hopefully going to be getting into them if they get money back from paying their taxes. And then once they do and they have stuff and have some stuff painted, I'm going to start purchasing some stuff. So this is getting me into the mood for, you know, ancients gaming, medieval gaming, and all that kind of stuff, which is just, I mean, it's just really cool. And the book is just, I mean, it's amazing. I'll have a link up on the show notes to its ISBN so that if you're interested in tracking it down, that you can try to find it and get it. So I just, that was really cool. And then one of the other things that I got for Christmas was Dungeons & Dragons Castle Ravenloft, the board game. And I got that from my parents. I have not played it yet, but I'm really excited because it is a game that you can play by yourself. I'm told it takes about an hour to play. You can play solo or with other people. And I've heard really, really good reviews about it. So I'm eager to play it. I just haven't had a chance. It's been really, really busy. So that was really cool. And then for New Year's Eve, I went out with my wife. We went to a friend's house who invited everyone over to have a little party. It was a small group, but we played some games. We played, what did we play? We played Munchkin Quest, I think it's called. It's Munchkin, but instead of just cards, you put cards down to create a board, kind of like you do with Order of the Stick, which was kind of cool. And, I mean, we had a good time playing some games and everything, and a lot of fun doing that. I hope all of you did likewise. Now, at this point, I want to get into the meat of things. I want to get into the books because this episode is filling up fast. We're at roughly the halfway mark, and let's talk some books. So I started talking already with Conwy Castle, but I want to talk about a couple other things. And I want to fast forward many, many, many thousands of years from Conwy Castle to World War II. And you're thinking, okay, he wants to talk about World War II, and why is that? Well, I've mentioned before on the show that I'm able, or I have been able to anyway, get some primary documents through my work about World War II. And the documents that I've gotten have been publications put out by Adolf Hitler's personal photographer, Heinrich Hoffmann. And these are propaganda pieces. They're books in the sense that, you know, they're bound manuscripts. But they're just full of photographs of Hitler or, you know, Nazi people, officials and so forth, out amongst the people. And, of course, all the people are so happy that Adolf Hitler's there near them. And they're so excited, like he's a superstar or some, you know, sort of misguided notion like that. But I'm interested in these because I'm really interested in the role that propaganda has played in war, and in particular in World War II with the Third Reich. And these are really cool because we can get our hands on these. You know, it's interesting to see how propaganda plays out in any time period. But if you want to see how propaganda played out in, say, like, the First Crusade, it's really hard to get your hands on primary material of that. And if it even still exists, I mean, it's so old, they're not just going to let just anyone to get in. You have to be, like, a serious scholar to get at that kind of stuff. I am not a serious scholar for this, but I am very interested in it, and I'm interested because I feel it helps me to be a better war gamer. I can kind of get in the mindset of how propaganda plays and how it plays in games design and, you know, see how it impacts all sorts of stuff. So I have one book right here, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the German. It's awful. But he's basically in, it's pictures of Hitler after part of some of the conquests had happened. And this is, I mean, this is a primary document. It was, you know, published in some sort of Nazi printing office over in the Third Reich. It has the NSDAP stamps on it. And, I mean, just sorts of stuff. But the photographs, even after all these years, I mean, they're all black and white, but they're fantastic. And they have lots of details. Like, there's one photograph that shows Hitler riding in Königsberg in 1938. And, you know, he's in one of his cars. And so you can see, for example, what the car was like and, like, where he sat and how the bodyguards are set up and the fact that there's trailing cars and, like, they're right on the sideboards and stuff. They show marches that they had. So you can see really good examples of the uniforms and the different medals and adornments that they had and how it's set up. You can see, you know, how they had, just, like, all that kind of stuff. You can see the processions and, like, how they organized everything. And, I mean, a lot of it just with the uniforms, which is of major interest to, of course, reenactors, but also to gamers who want to make sure that uniforms are historically accurate, that maybe they painted them properly, and just, like, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it has tons of this in here. And, you know, I feel kind of weird getting, like, Nazi stuff out, but I'm not doing it because I'm thinking, hey, the Nazis are awesome, because I don't. I'm doing it for legitimate reasons, which is kind of cool. And this book in particular was kind of a challenge because it was hard for me to get. And then when it arrived, it turned out that one of the pages was torn out. And normally I'd be like, well, someone tore out a page from a book, that's awful. But you know, maybe I don't care because maybe it doesn't have information I need, but it's missing photographs. So I did what any other person hopefully would do who works in a library. I said, can we get a copy of the missing pages from somewhere? So we tried, and we got some college that was willing to scan the two pages that I needed from a copy of theirs and, you know, email the scanner, which was really cool for me to be able to get them digitally. And now I have those missing photographs, and I can digest the book and examine it and study it with those photographs. And, you know, this is something that's normally like a rare book, a place not going to let it out. But for some reason, one library not only sent me a copy of the book, but another library was willing to scan the missing pages and send those to me. Now, let's change gears a little bit, and I just want to back up to ancient history. I noticed that my library owns a copy of a book called Caesar's Army, which I have not yet read. I'm going to get into it because I have an interest in Hail Caesar. I have an interest in ancient Rome. I've been watching the Showtime, I guess it is. HBO series Rome, which I know is not completely historically accurate, but kind of gives you a feel for things. But this book, Caesar's Army, it talks about, you know, the members of his army and how it's set up and, you know, how they're paid and fighting techniques and organization. It has illustrations for maps of battles and it, I mean, just all that kind of stuff. It shows about the Gallic Wars and it has illustrations for, like, how the Roman forts were set up and, like, just all that kind of stuff slash sort of stuff. You can tell I'm getting excited about it because I'm just going all jibber-jabber. But it has illustrations of, like, some of their weapons and all sorts of different things. And, I mean, this is invaluable to a gamer because you can get this. You can read about, oh, well, you know, the forces are organized this way. So maybe you're going to create a scenario. Maybe you're going to create the scenario for Hail Caesar or some other rule set, DBA or whatever. And this helps you build your order of battle. This says, well, these are the forces I need, and this is how they're set up. This tells you how you should paint the stuff, because you can see, oh, well, the armor's here, here, and here. This could lead you to other resources if you look in their appendix or the bibliography or the index or whatever to see what else this person maybe had written or had read or whatever. So this is going to lead you to other stuff, and I think reading Caesar's Army is going to teach me quite a bit about Caesar's Army, oddly enough, and that I can then take that information and apply it to when I do things like Saga, when I do things like DBA or Hail Caesar, any of that kind of stuff. Now, you'll notice I'm kind of jumping back and forth in time periods, and I'm doing that on purpose. The next one I want to talk about is, well, I don't know if it's brand new, but it looks pretty new to me, and I'm actually just flipping inside to look at the copyright page, which is a handy, handy thing to have, and it's not brand new. It's a 2009 book, but it's pretty cool, and it's called Fighting Techniques of the Colonial Era, 1776 to 1914, Equipment, Combat Skills, and Tactics. As you can guess, I got this partly because it has a picture on the front of the portrait of George Washington crossing the Delaware, but also because it has information about the American Revolutionary War. When I flipped through this at work, and you hear me flipping through it now, I was really excited because it has illustrations, it has reproductions of portraits, it has pictures of uniforms, it compares what a regular and an irregular soldier would wear. It has illustrations of the weapons, and it has color maps of some of the battles. One of them happens to be the Siege of Yorktown, 1781. So it has this fantastic, you know, color map that just shows the layout of stuff. It shows where the American forces were, where the French fleet was, where the British were. And it has little, you know, notations on the map to say, well, there's this and there's that. As you can guess, again, invaluable. You're creating a scenario for black powder. And you want to know how your table should be set up. You want to know where the forces should go. You want to get an idea. Do they come in the first turn? Are they reserves? What goes on? You want to know what they're outfitted with and how they're organized. Well, this book, I think, is going to be a great help to me with my black powder endeavors, which I am heavily focused on right now. It has all sorts of information, fantastic, you know, illustrations, fantastic colors. I mean, just all sorts of stuff. It covers a broad range. It goes all the way up to the Alamo and World War One and so forth. I, of course, am not going to use all of that. I'm focusing more at the beginning, 1776, kind of for the American Revolution. But the book is broken down into five chapters. It talks about the role of infantry, talks about mounted warfare, command and control, basically generalship. It talks about siege warfare and naval warfare. And like any good book, it has a bibliography in it to just kind of tell you where they got the information, which means these might be resources I want to read after and perhaps talk about on the show. I will, of course, have a link to this in the show notes so that you can track it down and check it out in case you are so inclined. If you don't want to buy books, and I mean, I love buying books, I love having the books, but, you know, try your local library. And if they don't have it, ask, do you belong to any agreements that other libraries would accept? Can you work with another library to get a copy that they have? Can you do interlibrary loan with another library? That's what I do. Maybe you could get a copy from somewhere else. Maybe, just maybe your library doesn't have it, but they'll do interlibrary loan and ask my library, and maybe I will send you the very copy that I have in my hands right now. I also want to talk about two other books just briefly. And this is more like, ooh, I'm super excited than I've looked at these and these are fantastic books. Someone recently gave me two books. They said, oh, you know, I have these two books. They're kind of old, but they're about gaming. Do you want them? And I was like, of course, I'll take them. And I thought, you know, I'll look at them. If they're of interest to me, I'll keep them and I'll have them. And then if they're not something I can use, maybe I'll give them away on the podcast or whatever. So the person, they gave me the two books and I looked at them and my jaw dropped because one is a first U.S. edition of Advanced War Games by Donald Featherstone. And the other is a first U.S. edition of The War Game by Charles Grant with a foreword by Brigadier Peter Young. I, of course, have flipped through both these. I haven't read them yet, but they are on my list to read. I mean, these are like granddaddies of wargaming. It doesn't get much better than this. They're just fantastic pieces to have. I've heard them talked about and referenced quite a bit on Battle Games Magazine and from a bunch of you guys. And I know these are like the holy grail to have. So I'm just really excited about these. And I can't wait to, you know, pick them up and start reading them. They're in great condition. You know, they're well bound and everything. It looks like, you know, I mean, they have some age because they're older books and stuff. But it looks like, you know, that they weren't used heavily. They're in good condition. So I'm really excited about that. And I can't wait to start, you know, opening up and start reading them. Now, the last book I want to talk about, and this is kind of going to be a review, but not really a review, just sort of kind of talking about it, is a book I got from work. I got from Interlibrary Loan. And it's called Man of Honor, Jack Steele in the Blenheim Campaign, July to August 1704. And it's by, I'm going to butcher the name, Ian Gill, who lives in the UK somewhere. And I think he's a journalist, actually. And he writes some historical novels. Now, this is, I think it's sharp, but set in the Blenheim Campaign. I know a lot of you enjoy Richard Sharp. I enjoy Richard Sharp. And enjoy reading the different stuff that Bernard Cornwell writes. This is kind of in the same similar vein. But this is the first book about Jack Steele. It talks about the Blenheim Campaign and the War of the Spanish Succession. Jack Steele is an officer who fights for Her Majesty Queen Anne. He's under the command of Marlborough. And it talks about, you know, Marlborough going and battling the French and fighting at Blenheim. The book was really cool because I don't know a whole lot about the War of the Spanish Succession. It's an area I am, unfortunately, pretty ignorant about. And the book, I felt, was easy. It was very accessible to get into. There were, you know, some errors in it. There were some typos and things of that sort. And some of the characters kind of felt one-dimensional. Some of the stuff, you kind of knew what was going to happen. But once I got into, like, the fighting and the actual battle, I mean, I felt like I was transported there. Like, I could see it. The whole premise of the book is that Jack Steele doesn't like this one other officer. And so they start to duel. And dueling is forbidden in the British Army. So Jack thinks he's going to get in trouble when a superior officer finds him. And it turns out that the superior officer is kind of like a right-hand man for Marlboro. And Marlboro has a special mission for Jack Steele. His army is running out of food. He needs to go get some more flour so they can make more bread. And Jack's like, you know, I'm a veteran and this and that. He's kind of insulted by it. But it turns out, well, of course, it's important because an army, you know, marches on its stomach. But it turns out that there's another mission, a secret mission, that Jack has to go on. The Duke of Marlborough had been in the Tower of London at one point and got out and doesn't want to go back. And some incriminating letters that he had written were captured and would make him out to be a Jacobite. So Jack Steele needs to go get the flour. And while he's getting the flour, the merchant who has the flour, who will sell it to him, happens to have the letter. And Jack needs to get the letter. So, of course, he has some trials and tribulations along the way. The officer that he has, let's just say, a dislike for, happens to go to. And the officer, it turns out, is a member of the Tory party and wants to get the letter to discredit the Duke of Marlborough because he does not like what the Duke is doing. How dare he change and care about the men and make sure they have shoes and so forth and are properly fed and everything. So he wants to get rid of the Duke of Marlborough and get someone better in. And in the process, maybe he will get a promotion so that he will get more money, more glory, more honor because he's a better fighting man. And he hates Jack Steele. So in the process, he will have to do what he can to harm Jack Steele. And, of course, they go on their adventure to get the flower, get the letter. And things happen there. And the book ends with the Battle of Blenheim. And anyone who knows anything about the Battle of Blenheim knows the outcome of the battle. But for me who didn't, it was interesting to read. And I gotta say, the book was just really cool. I know there are other ones that are written in this series, and I intend to read them. I actually put a request in for the second book. Now, I know this book, it's put out by HarperCollins, but it's not that easy to find. I had to get it through my work. We had to ask somewhere else to send it. I think we had to ask someplace in New York to send it for me. But you can purchase the book. If you go to Barnes & Noble, I believe it is, they have it as a Nook book, basically an e-book that you can read on their e-reading device, or on an iPad with the Barnes & Noble app. And it's like $6 as a, you know, as an ebook. Or you can track it down and buy it in hardcover. It was a good book. It wasn't the best I've ever read. Like I said, the parts that dealt with the Battle of Blenheim were more interesting, and the parts that deal with some of the other fighting that happens in the book was definitely more interesting. Some of the writing was a little flat, but it's the person's first book in this series, so I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and just see how things go. So far, I would recommend it as a read if you have any interest in the War of the Spanish Succession, any interest in the Age of Black Powder, or if you like Bernard Cornwell, you like the Sharp books. I gotta say, I don't think it's as good as any of the Sharp novels, but I mean, Sharp novels kind of have this whole mystique of their own, and I mean, they're the Sharp novels. So, I mean, there's that too. But it's an interesting read. It's, you know, obviously geared for a history buff. Bernard Cornwell has a little blurb on the back. He says, a powerful novel of men at war, a triumph. And I'm sure he was paid, you know, to put that in. Or HarperCollins said, hey, dude, Bernard, you gotta write a thing for this book. We're trying to get this author out and help him out and stuff. But, I mean, it was pretty cool. And the guy who wrote this, E.M. Gill, has written other stuff. I think he's written about some Vietnam, I think, or World War II stuff. And he wrote a novel called 4 Days in June. It's a standalone military adventure that happens to take place in the battlefields of Waterloo. And like I said, he does this Jack Steele series. So give it a try. I know a lot of you are interested about Black Powder. I don't know, maybe you've been playing Black Powder. You might be interested in the War of the Spanish Succession, which would be perfect for using Black Powder. And maybe this book will give you some ideas on playing the Battle of Blenheim. So that could be pretty cool. And like I said, I do recommend it. It's not the best book ever, but I think it's worth a read, especially if you can get it at a buy at a discount price or get it at your local library or something of that sort. Well, we're getting near the end of the episode, and I want to finish things up by talking about Sopa and Pippa. Now, these two acts are basically, they're things that F signed into agreement by Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives, respectively. They will become law, and these are going to censor the internet. There's a video online about, you know, what these are hoping to do and what they will really do. And I'm going to put that up on our Facebook page, on Twitter. I'm going to put it on the blog. I'll probably put it in the show notes as well. It's only 4 minutes long. I ask you to watch it. Now, why should we be concerned about SOPA and PIPA, P-I-P-A? Well, we should be concerned because what they will do as they are now written is they will give the power to oversee the internet to, you know, the entertainment industry. And the whole purpose of this is that no one likes that there is piracy happening, that people just illegally download movies and music and TV shows and books and all that kind of stuff. No one likes it. And I mean, if you create something, you own something, you need to have your rights protected and respected. So like if I wrote a book, then I would hope that people, you know, if you want it, go to your local library. They would have bought it or buy a copy of it. Don't illegally download it. If I was a musician, I would hope that you're not illegally downloading my music. But this isn't the answer because these two acts allow it to go much too far. Where basically, if any website happens to have a user who posts anything that the overseeing authorities happen to view as infringing into the realm of piracy, they shut down the entire website, the entire server. They block it. If it's on the U.S. soil, it's gone. There's lawsuits involved. So what does that mean? Well, that means social networks, things like Facebook and Twitter and stuff, are in huge trouble because they have to then police their own people. And if no matter how hard they police it, no matter what they do, if one person just kind of does something, kaput. What does that mean for here at the CWF Gamecast and Wargaming Recon? Well, it means that I'm going to be very hesitant about talking about games. I'm going to be hesitant about reviewing games. If I use a picture of a game, if I, you know, reference something, I could be shut down because of that. It means that, you know, maybe I'm not going to even be able to have images of things that I review. Maybe I won't be able to take a picture of Castle Ravenloft, put the picture that I took of that game up on the web and say, hey, look at this. It means that if someone reads something I posted on the blog and, you know, post something on there that could potentially in some vague way appear to be, you know, infringing on stuff or violating SOPA or PIPA, that the entire blog gets shut down and I'm gone. That's it. I can't come back. It's not good. I don't think anyone wants people to illegally get stuff. I think we can all agree that that is bad, that you need to, you know, respect the rights and pay for the stuff. But I don't think this is the answer. As a result of that, I have pulled all of the domains that I own from GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy is a domain registrar. They're basically a company, you pay them, and they say, okay, you want the domain of WarGamingForums.com, so we're going to say that you, quote, are leasing the domain, and you're the person who, you know, has it. They were supporting SOPA until there was a mass migration of people who said, you know what, we don't agree with that. We're taking our domains and sending them elsewhere. And tons of people had done this, tons and tons and tons, and major outlets, ICANN Cheeseburger, and all sorts of people transferred tons. So GoDaddy said, oh, wait a sec, we don't want to lose all your business. We now no longer support SOPA, but they still support PIPA. So I transferred all of our domains away from them into people who do not support either of these. I am happy to say that, as far as I know, we are not doing business with any entity that supports either of these acts. We also know that our web host, Bluehost, does not support either of these. And as long as they don't support them, I'm happy to continue doing business. So we're doing what we can to make sure that these acts don't pass. Because, you know, we want to stick around. We're not doing anything wrong. And most people are not. The internet is huge and does a lot of business. It has a lot of startups. It does a lot of innovation. But doing this is exactly what places like China have done, where they've just censored the entire internet and put an iron curtain around things. I mean, do we really want to be doing that? Do we want to be going back to the dark age and saying, your freedom of speech doesn't count? We're not allowing this. And I mean, I think the people's hearts are in the right place, that they want to, you know, protect those who have the copyrights and the trademarks and the intellectual property and the creators and stuff. But they're not, this isn't the way to do it. They're doing it the wrong way. So I'd like to ask all of you to contact your senators and your representatives and ask them to vote against these acts. This podcast is not a political one. I don't get up here and say, I want you to vote for this, I want you to vote for that, or this is good, that's bad, or whatever. But this impacts all of us. This means that not only me, but it means other podcasts you like, other gaming blogs you read, other blogs, other social media networks, just other internet stuff might not be around anymore. It means that the internet's going to be drastically different, and it might even, you know, do serious damage to the internet. So like I said, I'm going to have a link up in the show notes to the video. I hope all of you would take the time to watch it. I also have a link up to a website that is trying to stop SOPA and stop PIPA. It's AmericanCensorship.org. And I hope you will go there and check it out and, you know, do what they have to say. So that is me getting down from my soapbox right now. This has been a long episode. I'm happy to be back. I'm thankful for all of you for listening. I'm thankful for everyone. I'm glad to be talking about gaming again. You can look forward to another episode, of course, every other week of Wargaming Recon, and we'll have new content for you all the time. Don't forget, TotalCon Contest, TrollITC.com, Battle Games Magazine Review. Check out Man of Honor book by Ian Gill. And in the future, we're going to be talking about Tropico 4. We're going to be talking about World of Warcraft. We're going to be talking again about War at Sea and much, much more. So thank you again for listening. And as always, you know the deal. Keep on gaming. Bye. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew M. and Court N. for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.